This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, of course it is. Tim and Johnny, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. July 4th, Johnny. Happy 4th, my friend.
Absolutely, man. What a great day. Hopefully, if you're listening, you're also just enjoying a nice day, maybe with friends, family, you know, you're out and about, hopefully enjoying the great weather that we always cross our fingers and hope, because, you know, you can always hold your breath for 10 seconds and the weather's going to change, especially, especially for our Wisconsin listeners, right? But, you know, great place to go if you're out and about. And even on the 4th is Minocqua Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company. We're big-time advocates of public education. They're always working hard to build community, make great beer. The most sued brewery in America, Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Happy 4th, Tim. It's summer. We're in the throes of it. Yeah. We've been having amazing conversations with our listeners. Been having great guests on. So many guests, Tim, that we haven't even had that opportunity to just chop it up together. You know, the Tim and Johnny banter has been a little sidelined. And welcome. We welcome that sideline because we've had awesome guests. But near and dear to both of us, Tim, is the quality of teaching. I mean, we're both teachers. We teach teachers. And it, you know, it's close to our heart. Even in our research, our own scholarship as professors has often been centered around.
Let me
around
add to that, though.
Yeah,
we teach teachers how to teach. Three teachers there. Teach teachers how to teach. Right? Okay. Go ahead, man. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood what we mean by us teaching teachers how to teach.
Well, yeah, Tim, and it's like, so if you're a newer listener or you tuned in recently, and we hope you keep tuning in because we love your input, is like, you know, Tim and Johnny, both of us taught in schools, right? So we both have a teaching background. Somewhere along the line, you know, we realized in that process, whoa, what's going on in schools? This is not really working for most kids. And in fact, not really that supportive for most of what we understood to be good teaching. Right. It's like we were taught to be good teachers. And here we were in schools and boom. Well, you know, I always say school happens and school seeps in. It's like the conditions and sort of the ways our schools are structured in the United States, especially, right? Is like we talk about all the time on the show. It's testing heavy. It's very focused on definitions of academic achievement, which is important. You know, we want kids to be strong readers. We want them to be great at their mathematics and understand, build a scientific literacy, right? An understanding of history and civics and, you know, put that all together. But so much of it was focused on what gets defined as academic achievement that it just didn't feel like the structures were in place to really be present for all of our students. And, you know, I'm sure Tim, similar to myself, we both talked about it before, but for listeners tuning in and getting more familiar with who are these two guys who talk about education, you know, we both thought, you know, come on, there's gotta be things we could do differently in schools. Well, that led us to furthering our own education. You know, when like fast forward, a couple of guys getting their PhDs in education and becoming teacher educators. That's right. Tim said it earlier on the show. Teachers who teach teachers. We also teach people who are researching education because we're educational researchers. So maybe it's former teachers. Sometimes it's people who just care a whole lot about changing schools. And we say, well, you can't just have an idea and want to change things. You got to have some research to back that up. So both of us got PhDs. You know, we went into with a strong mission. So what could we do to make our schools in this country great for every kid? And by every kid, like Tim, we meant all of them, not just the kids who are already coming to us like, hey, I'm great at school. You know, all the kids, whether that's diverse learners or children from diverse cultures or children experiencing poverty, right? Or children who had adverse childhood experiences, all of those things. We're like, hey, school too often isn't set up in a way where we can, one, do the kind of teaching we were taught to do, and two, can't support all our learners. So here we are, flash forward, you know, a couple of guys with a radio show too, and, you know, a stack of publications, and we get to teach our courses. But I will say, Tim, the kinds of conversations we've been getting to have on Busted Pencils help keep that fire going, that there is change. There is change that's possible. There's so many different things we could do. And flash forward, Tim, to recent conversations we've been having with our peers, other folks who teach at colleges across this country and around the world, about how that is also about learning to teach. Because too often, and we had a guest on recently, Jonathan Gierko, if you haven't gotten to check out that podcast, you can go to the Civic Media website and kind of scroll down a little bit, because it was Tuesday last week that we spoke to him most recently. And you can see that Jonathan from the ACUE, right, has a whole commitment in his research and his team to improving the instruction that students get in our universities and our college systems across this country. So it's really fascinating, because we often think, hey, you're an expert, you must be able to teach. But boy, Tim, if two guys, you know, could come together and say, we know what we don't know,
right?
Even having been teachers ourselves, that were pretty successful, right? We got all the accolades you could get in a classroom. There was still a whole lot we knew we weren't able to do and we wanted to get better at. And just getting our PhDs didn't necessarily make us better teachers.
No, man.
So we were set up to become pretty good college professors because, you know, we had some teaching experience and we spent a lot of time researching good teaching. It trickles into your teaching, but doesn't even guarantee it. And that's a couple of educated educators being honest and vulnerable about our own teaching. So imagine if you're like the world's leading expert, Tim, and molecular biology, it is likely that you haven't been taught to teach, or that when you have been taught to teach, it's just a tiny little piece of that larger education that you were part of. And understandably so. I mean, you're studying to be the world's leading expert in molecular biology. There's not a whole lot of time to become a great teacher. So I was stoked to learn about Jonathan Gierko, his work, the organization that he represented, and also to be having this conversation to him about what do we do if we want to be better teachers? So if you're a listener out there that either goes to college, knows someone who goes to college, you went to college, or maybe you're also a university instructor or a teacher or professor, you probably know all too well that there's a big difference between professing and teaching. Tim, you put that in the chat, because you know we have a chat room here for folks who can't see that. We can. Tim says there's a big difference between professing and teaching. Tim, tell us about that difference.
Well, you think about that, right? I mean, put the terms and define them. When I stand to profess, right, I'm telling, you know, and if you remember, and it doesn't necessarily have to be professors too. I bet people can go, I had a fourth grade teacher who spent a lot of time telling, right? And so that's what we're talking about. The difference between telling and teaching, we typically sometimes try to think that mostly teaching is occurring in K-12. A lot of times in colleges, professing is happening and telling. And Johnny, what you said though is as to why does the telling seem to be the model that kind of always permeates people's memories of sitting down and being a student, is being talked to, being told to. It's what you just said, though, is because what we narrowly focus on, which is measuring academic gains on test scores. And guess what? And we don't even know if this is the best way to increase academic gains, but for the longest time we can remember, we typically tell people what they don't know, because Johnny, you don't know what you don't know. I know what you don't know, but I'm going to tell you what you don't know. Johnny, your job then is to learn it and then give it back to me. So professing and telling is a far cry away from engaging learners, designing situations that elicit curiosity, that dig students into wondering or potentially even rattling the way they thought about something to know that, holy crap, things are changing. That's teaching. And Johnny, to understand how to get to teaching away from professing, for some people, that's a huge leap to get to that place. Because when you are, as you point out, the expert in, you know, microplastics, you know so much. And the biggest thing, and you're looking at me, and so you're looking at me, Tim Slucker, you're going, Tim doesn't know a darn thing about microplastics. The number one thing I can do as a professor is tell him everything I know so that I can start bringing him up to speed. And that is largely that model of what it means to be a college teacher or a professor. When we talk to Jonathan Gerko from the Association of College and University Educators, is to say their organization is saying, wait a minute, there is teaching, and teaching is an art and a craft. And we have a responsibility as professors in higher education to lead a movement that is pushing for teaching as opposed to professing and telling. What we're talking about, though, how do you get to that point? And I will own this, Johnny Lupinacci. I have in times found myself telling way more often than I would like to teach sometimes, because it is easier. It is what I remember. And it is the socialization process of learning to be a teacher that I witnessed the most and that all of us have witnessed. And so it's also, how do you create the escape velocity to get out of the traditional paradigms that you actually were socialized into? It takes a lot. So what we're going to talk about, Johnny, you said this, I remember this. So when was it that I realized that I wanted to truly engage teachers? And when did I want to engage teachers who are going to be teachers? That was when that realization was, I then need to step up my game. Boy, I wish back then, though, and we're going to talk more about this when we come back after the break, when you have that desire to be better, what can you do? It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. Back after the break.
Oh, yeah, we are on the streets today. We're on the streets every day, and we're on the radio, the airwaves, every weekday right here at Civic Media. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. We're back in this segment to Tim. Man, what you were sharing in that first segment, it resonated with me, right? It is so true that we, all of us, we spent, you know, how many years in school, that we were socialized into what it kind of meant to be a teacher or be a learner. And that's very different than often what we understand good, what we learn is good teaching. So we have this primary socialization, the, you know, our first encounters and our most frequent encounters with learning in school, we're kind of in the patterns and the culture of like school, like you explained, like kind of sit down and listen to the teacher. The teacher's going to tell you everything you need to know. Tim, we had a great guest a couple of weeks back, and she'll be back on again and accompanied by other great educators. But Dr. Sierra Kaler Jones, director of Rethinking Schools, talked about the banking model of education. And so what is it that Tim referenced we are socialized to as educators is this understanding. And I think this is getting to that difference between professing versus teaching, Tim. Is that banking model introduced by Paulo Freire, right? That it's a metaphor that sort of think about like a bank, like money, you deposit it or you take it out. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is describing that most schooling is happening under the assumption that the teacher has the knowledge, or in this metaphor, the money, and they put it into the bank. And so the student's mind is a container. Mm-hmm. And you put the information into it as a teacher. And then that student has it in there, in the container of their mind, right, that they can recall or put back out. It's transactional. And so that metaphor is really helpful to understanding that that is not good teaching, right? Sometimes direct instruction, or Tim telling a great story or sharing your experience, is really great teaching. But if by and large, the learning experience is dominated by the idea that if I'm the teacher, I think that, Tim, you're the student and that you're an empty container, and that I just got to get that knowledge that I have as the world's leading expert on something and just somehow get you that in your brain that you could take out and spend when you need to apply it. And that metaphor sets us up for failure in a lot of ways, right? And so it's not to discredit direct instruction. A lot of teachers out there know sometimes you just got to teach stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also, not everybody who has the knowledge is really good at sharing it, right? Doesn't have good practice around sharing it. Also, you know, what we know about that banking model is that doesn't promote thinking about it. It doesn't promote creativity, ingenuity. It doesn't promote long-lasting experience. So even if we memorize something, we might not be able to always so often pull it back out and apply it. Some things you just got to memorize, but it's that real application stuff. It's the content that we thought about, that we wrestled with, that we had conversations about, that really help that learning stick and then apply. So flash forward, Tim, if most of us learn to teach in a banking model where we as teachers, we're being taught as though we're empty containers and you're just going to put good teaching information into our brain, then it's likely we can know it, but not always do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's something also really important to think about in this, is even teachers learning to teach, what we know about research tells, what the research tells us is we're teacher educators. We want to know, like, how can we actually get people becoming teachers to change how they teach? Mm-hmm. Well, that's much easier said than done, because we're up against that socialization, Tim, that you talked about, and that dominant banking model.
Yeah.
That's sort of like a cultural habit of mind for students, for parents, for teachers, for everybody associated in education. We think of teaching as, well, the teacher has the information, they put it into the kids' minds, and then the children recall it and apply it. But Tim, you know what I'm really, you know, excited about is the research tells us that for teachers, and this shouldn't, like, we shouldn't need a bunch of research to tell us this, but we have it, that change in instruction, changing in how we teach, change of instruction is connected to teachers talking with other teachers about teaching.
Mm.
I'm gonna say it one more time.
There you go.
Change of instruction has been researched to been shown that we only have evidence of change of instruction when teachers are supported to have time to learn through talking to each other about teaching, and specifically about the students they teach.
Right.
So we could say is, like, most classrooms where we learn to teach best are setting the table, right? At best are inspiring us or introducing us to new concepts. But if we really want to see those concepts or those practices applied, then what the research tells us is we have to spend time talking to each other about our teaching, the successes and the failures, the struggles and the ease, the joy. We have to share it all with one another and process it together, specifically related to our students. That's a kind of higher order of thinking and learning. It's not something we could get by reading a book. Mm. Now, it's something that reading a book can accompany, as long as there's supported time where teachers are talking with other teachers about those concepts related to their teaching, specifically to the students they teach. We know that that is, in a sense, the anecdote, the magic, I call it the magic ticket, right? That's the thing that we want to support. So if you're a teacher out there, you kind of might be saying, oh, Maybe that's why that concept of professional learning communities, PLCs, or time we spend together. Now, if you're a seasoned vet teacher, like Tim and Johnny, or like the people we talk to, like we have Educators Amplified on all the time, every week on Wednesday, we're always saying, like, are we really giving time to teachers to have those conversations and to talk about? Because teachers know what they need. But so often, we don't really have that kind of time and space to really become better teachers. And Jonathan Gerko, our guest last Tuesday, was telling us, we especially don't afford that kind of time to college teachers. Even if in a perfect system, we're saying, well, the infrastructure is there. I think we're doing that in K-12. Tim and Johnny are here saying, well, we're kind of not always doing that in K-12, but we should be. But the infrastructure is there. We're definitely too often not doing that in higher education. It's just sort of assumed, well, they're experts. They should become great at teaching. They could do that too. We know it takes more than that. So Tim, I don't know, man, but you are a guy who's close to this stuff. In as we unpack this in this, in this show tonight, I really want to ask you, like, so you've taken this on. You've really said, like, how can we support college teachers becoming better teachers, especially when Jonathan has told us, look, it's actually, the research shows us, it's not in their interest if they're looking for economic or career gain. However, it's really important. So we got to talk about, I'm curious, like, for our listener, dispelling the sort of myth of what did professors do? And then how can we get better at our teaching? So it's going to be a bang. I'm going to interview you, Tim, when we come back.
All right.
Some questions. So stick with this, listener. When we come back, Tim's going to talk to us about becoming better teachers.
You know, sometimes it feels like that. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. And actually today, teachers talking teaching and how to wait, how'd you put that up there, Jess? Teachers teaching how to teach, or teachers teaching teachers how to teach. How about that? Four, though. Three educated educators talking education, or teachers teaching teachers how to teach. And actually, Johnny and Tim, educated educators, talking to each other about the experience of what it means to become a teacher. Johnny, you really laid out in that last segment just a depth of truly taking us to that point of going, wow, we have a banking model. You know, we typically remember that. It's like, hey, you know, we're depositing information into kids' heads. And so the best teachers know the most information to put into kids' heads, and the whole just, you know, banking model. And I said, yeah, you know, think about that too. That model is so powerful that you take any second grader, any group of second graders, and ask them to play school, and they will line kids up in rows, and they will put somebody in the front, and that person in the front will be telling the kids what to do. And so that model is so powerful. So, Johnny, you're saying, how do we get teachers to move away from that banking model, from that direct instruction model? It requires them to have that opportunity to really converse with each other, to analyze practice, to talk about teaching, as you were saying. And I think you're going to ask me about my teaching you wanted to.
Well, yeah, Tim. I mean, because here we come up on the topic, actually, is like, so what do we do to improve as teachers in college, like higher education? So post, you know, secondary education. So after high school, whatever that is, whether that's at community college, whether that's at, you know, university, whether that's, you know, in adult learning, professional development contexts. You know, how do we become better educators and not just, you know, teachers who reproduce those cultural habits of schooling that you talked about that are framed in the banking model, but that are about, you know, like, well, I know a lot about this, like even in another career, maybe it's sales. I'm a really successful salesman. Let me tell you what I do.
Right.
And that can be, that information itself can be helpful, but it doesn't necessarily fit, resonate, or translate to learning from the learner becoming a great salesperson. So, you know, this isn't only for, you know, how do you teach English better or how do you teach history better? It's in general, how do we, you know, improve as educators, primarily who are educating adults? Maybe they're young adults if you're teaching like 19-year-olds in college, right? But as many of us know, you know, professional learning occurs at all stages of our life. And so that's kind of what I'm really curious about, Tim, is you've been sort of taking that on almost not quite as a researcher, but sort of as, you know, investigative journalist, as a guy who cares a lot about this. But, you know, we scratch the surface of it often in this show when we talk about how do we improve good quality education? Like, what can we do? And one of the things is, like, we've heard from listeners and from guests is like, hey, you know what? Professors also need to be better at teaching. Well, we had a guest on and we've been talking with an organization. Tim, you went to the ACUE conference, right? Mm-hmm. To learn more about this. So I'm just curious, two things. One, I know about life of a professor because I've been a professor now for, you know, about 13 some years. Mm-hmm. That's not even that long, but I'm pretty familiar with the daily routine of it. But, you know, for our listener, so one, what's the life of a traditional life of a professor? And I know it's a little different depending on who you are, but someone who teaches college.
Right.
And then two, how do they get better at what they do? So, I mean, who better to ask that to than, you know, a professor in education? Tim, tell us a little bit about, like, you know, kind of in general, what is it professors do? I mean, we know you guys are smart and stuff, right? You know, we know, you know, you're what you know, but what do you do? Like, what's the job?
Oh, man, the job. Well, yeah, we have to frame it very specifically, and maybe we'll do that then too. You know, my main preoccupation or thinking about what my job was when I was in front of the classroom, college students. So imagine you want to learn how to be an elementary school teacher, right? Well, there are content areas that you need to learn. And then there's how to teach those content areas. My specialty was social studies, American history. So you might come to my class, and my class is me teaching you how to teach social studies and history to kids. And so how do I then translate that information to learners? Because college students sitting in front of professors are learners. They're there to learn. They're not there to listen. Listening is sometimes part of what you do to learn. But when I sit down, and so I think of this and going, how would I inspire 19 to 20 some year olds to look at little kids and go, I want to make them totally excited and learn everything there is to know about social studies, or even just say American history. How do you inspire? And I come from that, inspire. And then though, how do I get them to question what I had said? The model they learned how to teach, because they watched first grade teachers, second grade teachers, third grade teachers, fourth grade teachers, fifth grade teachers teach them social studies and American history. They have an idea of what they think it means. And once I get them to examine that, as you just said, that practice, how do I get them to change or move away from the telling them? Because when I ask all of my students, did you enjoy learning social studies and history? It's almost always, no, it was so boring, Dr. Slegger. You know, nobody ever says social studies and history was so hard. It was always so boring. I was like, okay, let's start right there. What is your goal then? Your goal in my class, and you're going to even fake it a little bit if you have to, your goal is to not be a boring social studies teacher to those second, third, fourth, fifth graders the way you experience it. So challenge one, how are you not going to be boring? And then, Johnny, I think about that and go, how do I then turn that into an experience over a semester that is going to take them from that standpoint and maybe over the course of 3 months, get them to recognize and go, ah, now I feel like I can do that differently than how I experienced it. That's a day thinking about how do I get ready to imagine my class. And then there is all over those 3 months over the semester, creating activities and experiences that will engage these students in situations and, you know, real life times where they can experience teaching and learning social studies and history differently. That's day to day. And you know what I spend a lot of time doing when I'm doing that? I spend a lot of time after class with students coming up to me going, I'm so confused because I thought I knew what I was doing until I started taking this class. And so that's my first goal, Johnny, cognitive dissonance, is for students to start questioning and saying, wow, I hear what you're saying. And then from that state, I realize that once cognitive dissonance is there, I have something to work with. How did I get to that point of knowing that, Johnny? I did not, to be honest, because of being an educated educator and taking classes in education, I had preparation and actually learning some of these things. Nowhere along my way did I have the opportunity to use like a Jonathan Gurko in an organization like the Association of College and University Educators and a national conference like I attended in Minneapolis, where professors are meeting together to talk about how they make their teaching great. And so like me, I could have been meeting with chemistry professors, history professors, all in the same room, talking about my desires and that story I just gave you, sharing that with them so that they can then share their stories with me and how we bring that together. How do we make that? I would have loved to have had an opportunity like that instead of just always meeting with professors of education. The idea of bringing the professors across campus, the historians, the chemists, the statisticians, the educators, putting them together to actually experience and talk about teaching and what works, what doesn't work. Specifically, Johnny, when the goal is learning, right? That is the big deal, is learning. I want those students in front of me to actually say, I learned something, not I remember something. I don't know. Is that kind of an opening?
Yeah, Tim, I love that, because as we're talking about it, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, we're having this conversation with a real base like we have an in-depth understanding of what the day-to-day work requirements, what's the job of being a professor? And so I'm going to share that a little bit. I'm going to generalize it because there are different ways that people become professors, you know, in colleges around, you know, like high, they get involved in being educators in higher education. And I don't even like that term higher education. It's just like post-secondary, you know, because secondary is high school. And so we have these labels for it. But, you know, in general, you're an expert in something. So for like what you're explaining, you're understood as an expert in social studies education.
Right.
So you have that expertise in the form of a PhD. And your job experience. So you might be teaching college because you're an expert in something. Maybe you are someone who's phenomenal at business and marketing, and you're teaching a business and marketing course. Maybe you're someone who's phenomenal at fashion design or at, you know, at sewing, and you're a seamstress and you have expert knowledge of that. You may even have an MFA, some advanced degree or work experience equivalent that constitutes you as an expert. And so I'll use that generally. And so then the idea is that we want those experts with the future experts. So we want to put experts in spaces where our learners are learning from the foremost thinkers or doers in those fields. So then you get a job, say, okay, I'm an expert. I have this advanced degree and I have this equivalent experience and I'm going to teach. Maybe I'm a sound engineer and I'm really good. I got industry cred and I'm really good at what I do. A local program or school hired me to teach future sound engineers. Great. So, but now you're in that role, and that day-to-day role, Tim, and most of our university structures or college structures require three things in different proportions, depending on where you work.
Yeah.
So the three job responsibilities that most college instructors, and that's what I mean by professors, have is that they have research, that they have to do. They have to stay up on their field. So if I'm saying, like, if I'm like a world leader and fashion design, I also have to keep doing my fashion design, right? And I have to be innovative and a leader in that. I have to be identifiable as a thought or, you know, as a creative leader in that. So they have that responsibility. You have to maintain sort of your status, your cred. And for a lot of people, that's their research. You also have teaching responsibilities. So you got to teach classes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You also have service responsibilities, which means you have to do some of the day in and day out work that helps make a college run. You may be advising students, you're going to meetings. You have to be part of committees that make decisions about what order the courses go in, different things like this. So you typically have three areas of work as a college teacher that you're, that you have responsibility for in different proportions. You may have heard that, like, well, I'm going to a research institution. Mm-hmm. Most of your instructors have a lion's share of their work requirement dedicated to their research. Then they have another proportion of that dedicated to their teaching. And most common is like a 40-40-20. 40% teaching, 20% service work, meeting with students, not in a teaching capacity like advising, being in meetings, part of committee and service. So those things. So in some cases, maybe I have a teaching position, it's like 80% teaching, 20% research and service. So there are different things. But we have three main responsibilities that we're attending to as college instructors. So kind of that brings me to, so Tim, where and within that do I have time to become a better teacher? And what ought the priorities be? So we can be a little critical of this. If we want really great teachers in higher education, might we have to think differently about this? Folks, stay with us. Listener, I hope you learned a little bit more about what these crazy professors do, right? And we'll talk more about it when we come back.
Seven Dust, school's out for the summer. Well, school is in. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, teachers teaching teachers how to teach. Oh, the conversation here. Deep. Johnny, though, the 40-40-20, the ratio of a college professor, I'm so glad you put that out there, because I think that is for people to go, it's like, what do college professors do all day other than, you know, stand in front of people and tell them things? Well, hopefully we're trying to do a little bit of dispelling that, you know, sometimes standing in front of people telling things isn't really the best way to, quote, teach. But on top of the teaching responsibility, so I gave a really long description of me just getting ready for one class that I would have to teach. So, Johnny, just to give a little bit more of an illustration of that 40-40-20. So when I was particularly at a research institution, but at a campus that had a focus on teaching, that ratio really did try to stick where it was like, you're a great teacher at this institution and it matters, and you better do some research, and the service you provide is also really important. And it probably turned into more of my responsibilities was 60% teaching, maybe 30. I don't know. And this is where it gets weird. The research and the service, and the service and the teaching, they kind of start to cross over, but I spend a lot of time. So I would teach four different classes a semester in that ratio. Two of them would be social studies preparation for teachers. One would be a course in intro, or, you know, the beginning of what does it mean to become a teacher, exploring education for people that want to think about becoming a teacher. And then I would teach either a graduate course in teaching social studies, or occasionally I would teach a 3-credit American Studies course for all students. And so that was what I would teach throughout the semester. And then I would have the responsibility or the assumption that I should at least publish one
to two articles throughout the course of that year doing my research. And then that service thing, boy, that really gets in there and starts going. It's like, when do you have time to work with advisees? When do you have time to serve on committees? When do you have time for the chancellor or the provost who calls you to be on a special task force? Those are all those things. So that, when you say 40, 40, 20, that's kind of like an estimation. Yeah. And so me being at a research institution, but being at a campus that was focused on teaching, my teaching was really the bulk. And so you hear about, I'm teaching four different courses, two different, preps that are the same, and then two other preps though that are different. So getting ready, I'm spending a lot of time preparing lesson plans and teaching because I'm teaching a lot of students. Within that, that's maybe, between anywhere from 60 to 100 students that I'm seeing every week throughout the semester. And those semesters are typically 15 weeks. So I'm spending all that time teaching. When do I have time, Johnny? This is the question then too. So imagine, and I'm an educated educator talking and teaching education. Now imagine my colleague who's there, who's a communications professor, who hasn't had preparation in teaching, and that's their teaching responsibility. They're teaching four different classes. When do they have time to get better? Well, Johnny, you asked that question of going, well, who's typically in charge? Well, it's either an academic provost or somebody in charge of academic affairs or a dean. You ask them, does teaching matter? And that's the question, does better teaching matter? And if they say, yes, it does, well, then you ask the question and go, well, what are you doing to help teachers? Like the way Tim just explained, he's teaching a 4-4 load. How do you help him find a way to get better? How do you help your faculty who are teaching outside of education to get better? You got to devote time. Or Johnny, and I think the way you said this during break, or are you coming at this from the, hey, look, people are just great teachers because they're born that way, and we don't have to invest time into them becoming a better teacher? I've seen that and I've heard that, but I think we're coming more and more down the deep understanding of going, good teaching is a skill. I think there are people who have proclivities towards being better, but boy, you can teach people to be a better teacher. And why does it matter today? And why does the work of AQ, the Association of College and University Educators, matter so much? Because learning matters, and the responsibilities that we have towards students, it really matters, especially today, Johnny. We need students coming out of their courses talking about how deep and rich the learning experiences were, how much they are engaged, and how much that contributes to their satisfaction and their overall growth. I think that really is, we have a responsibility at changing the narrative around what's going on in those college classrooms. So I don't know, I'm hoping this episode really kind of gives people a sense of going, man, there's a lot to this teaching and learning. They take it seriously, though. And in fact, though, how do we help Jonathan Gurko and AQ create that movement? Well, if what we're talking about is interesting to you, Johnny, we should be talking about it more. And then the other thing, though, too, Johnny, one of the best places to do a conversation like this outside of the classroom and outside of the college campus, tell them where, Johnny.
Oh, well, Tim, I mean, that's a no-brainer. It's Monaco Brewing Company. You know that. They're big-time advocates for public education. And you know what? Just a great place to go and grab a brew. If you're in Madison or if you're up in Monaco, stop by, grab a brew, have some good conversation with the good folks over at Monaco Brewing Company. Or if you're not close by, you can check out monacobrewingcompany.com, see where you can get their progressive beer. Tim, I love this. It's an age-old question. I ask it all the time, especially of educational administrators, deans, provosts, principals, superintendents. Do you think that people are born good teachers or that we learn to be good teachers? It's that age-old nature versus nurture. You brought it up. I know Jess amplified that when we were talking between segments earlier this show. But I really mean that, because if you believe that people learn to be good teachers, then taking time to support them being a good teacher at the level they're at, it needs time, it needs money, it needs support. I love that we're talking about it, because I think both of us believe that, sure, you can be born to be a great talker or be, a certain kind of teacher, but everybody can learn to teach. Mm. And so how do we become better teachers? How do we support those movements across our campuses, across our country? And really, I'd like to say match the great strong efforts that our students coming out of K-12 system are experiencing. So they've seen good teaching and they're like, hey, how come I'm not getting that in college?
Exactly.
And so it's like, it's overdue. It's trickling up. So college folks, if you're out there, either in class or you're teaching classes, you want to be part of the conversation, tune in and join us, right? We love to hear from our listeners. We're going to keep having this conversation. Tim, it's near and dear to both of our work and our hearts. Always good to chop it up with you, Tim and Jess. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk.